Okay, so welcome back to The Glam Chemist. We're here with another episode, and I'm excited to introduce you to someone that I've known for quite some time, and we've come from the same community, and she's also a female in STEM working very hard and diligently in different spaces. I think it'd be great to get her perspective. So we have Jasmine Chibuk.
Hi, everybody. As Genesis said, my name is Jasmine Chibuk. I'm a fifth year in the biochemistry, biophysics, and structural biology program at WashU in St. Louis. I've always liked science. When I was a kid, my grandma and I would do these little science experiments together, little arts and craftsy types of things, but it stuck with me. I think I've always been curious, and STEM is a great way to explore those curiosities.
Yeah. So as I mentioned in the intro, like, you and I come from the same community, and I think it'd be helpful to know, like, what of our growing up and our schooling, since we had pretty much the same educators, what influenced you in your early education to pursue STEM?
Yeah, so I think Garfield has gotten, I feel like, a bad rep sometimes for the school system and just education in general. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I feel like I've been really lucky throughout elementary up to high school to have been blessed in a way with teachers who have cared about my career path and cared about my choices moving forward. As I mentioned, I've always liked science. And so science and math have always been my favorite classes. But I've never been discouraged at any point not to move forward. Especially, I'd say in high school, I had a few teachers who really pushed forward, like I'm sure you know Miss Lauterman or Miss D'Angelo and Mr. Marino. Especially, I think Miss D'Angelo's her biology classes, marine bio. I wanted to do marine biology at first, but I get seasick, so that's a no-go.
I wasn't gonna make it through that one.
No, definitely not. No, so. I also considered like med school at one point. I knew that all that was fun, but I get really grossed out at the sight of blood. And so that was another automatic no-go. So I pursued an undergrad degree in biochemistry and molecular biology to just see where it would take me. And then in undergrad, I thought I'll go into pharmacy. So I wanted to go into pharmacy school, but that's because I thought that I could do pharmaceutical research by going into pharmacy school.
Yeah. And then it's more like farm talks and
right. Yeah. So I learned early on, luckily, that pharmacy school was, you know, actually meant for people who wanted to become pharmacists. Mm-hmm. And that is not what I want to either. So I did some research and then with one of my PIs at in my undergrad, and she encouraged me to pursue a PhD. And so I didn't even know PhDs were a thing. Which was really cool to learn.
So I would love to hear more about, like, you know, what kind of guiding forces did you have during that time when you were deciding what to do?
Yeah. So Miss Lauterman, actually, I took her, what was the class where the work, you transitioned from like high school to working.
Yeah. We're like, so I can't believe these thoughts are not like work study, not work. Work study. Yes. I'm like, I feel like it wasn't that long ago. Why isn't my brain registering these things?
I took work study with Miss Lauterman, and she got me to work at the Boys and Girls Club, which I volunteered with previously anyway. So it was a nice, easy transition, but the Boys and Girls Club also allowed me to develop a STEM program with the kids because I knew I liked STEM. And so I would do these, you know, little fun kind of going back to what my grandma would do with me, I would do with the kids. And I loved it. I still to this day love teaching about science, especially to younger ones. It's a lot of fun. But so that was a nice transition to know, like, this is definitely what I want to do. I want to do research. I want to do science. And talking with like Mr. M and Miss D'Angelo about what possibilities there are in science, given that we knew marine bio and pre-med were out of the option for me.
By that point, you'd gone through the first two bowls.
Yeah. I didn't even have to go to college to know that those were not going to be it for me. But then we decided that, you know, pharmacy, I liked research. Pharmaceuticals was always an option, you know, developing something pharmaceutical. And so Mr. McCrone also, I consulted him about which like schools would be a good option. And I ended up only applying to three undergrads, Wilkes University in PA, U Sciences in Philly, and then Stockton in Galloway, New Jersey. And what it came to in the end was honestly, which was the cheapest to go to. They were all a good distance away from home, but you know, far enough that you could be away, but close enough that you can come back if you wanted to.
Yeah, I can vouch for you. Science as not being the most affordable option.
No, it was
definitely
not.
All the resources were there. And like, I can attest my career to being an alum of U Sciences, but yeah, you were smart and to not have as much student debt. That's probably why you were able to pursue a graduate degree, because I think one of the things that's really keeping me from pursuing a graduate degree is the fact that, you know, I invested so much in my undergrad. I wouldn't trade it away. Lots of lessons.
Sure.
One of the most difficult things I've ever done is pursue STEM. But yeah, U Sciences, I can say, was an amazing opportunity. But like, yes, being smarter about how I was expending my money. And that's another thing about things that I didn't know. Like, I was a first generation high school graduate. So like, I didn't know what it meant to go to college and spend money on an education. And I was just thinking of like, for me specifically, I was thinking of like, what university is going to give me the best opportunity. And U Sciences just had all of these like connections and like a lot of internship opportunities. But yeah, I do wish that I had been smarter about how much it was going to cost me.
Yeah. So I was also a first gen, a first gen high school graduate, as well as college or anything. My mom did not finish high school, and my dad technically did finish high school, but in Turkey. And so it was very different. And then, you know, not speaking English when he moved here, but it makes it different, you know, when you're the first person to grow up in America and get an education here. I was lucky in the fact of undergrad, but the reason I ended up choosing Stockton in the end was I didn't even know how student loans worked, and neither did my parents. And so we did not want to have to try and figure that out, because truthfully, in the end, it would have been me figuring it out. And I probably would have caused a lot of havoc for my family had I even tried to do that. And Stockton gave me the best scholarship such that I had very minimal to pay off, which again, I'm extremely lucky and extremely grateful for. But the fact that it was in state, you know?
Yeah, I can vouch for that. I mean, I did go through the entire like FAFSA and loan application process on my own. Like, my parents were there as like physical support, but they really didn't know how to guide me through that process. And I just remember like every year it was just like, that was the one big cry.
One
big moment where I was just like, I couldn't, it was my first time of like real adult moment of understanding what it meant to even file taxes. Like, my family, my parents never filed their own taxes either. So it's like learning all of this weird jargon as a first generation graduate. It's like, you are solely dependent on whether or not you're going to get the financial aid you need. And I only learned later what it really meant to apply for FAFSA and what was beneficial and what wasn't. And that's unfortunate, because, you know, you were smart enough to make the decision with your parents. Like, maybe we can do this diplomatically some other way. You know, my family, your blessings, God bless you, because like, my family didn't even understand why I wanted to go away. What's crazy is that now, like, FDU offers a 5-year master's program, and now Rutgers has all of these like integrated cosmetic science programs with like a bachelor's and a master's. And there's all of these new resources now. But when I was seeking like an education, even when I would mention to folks that I wanted to go in cosmetic science, they're like, oh, like, that's not something we hear every day. When you were in your undergraduate experience, like, how did you decide? Obviously, you had the influence from your advisor, but like, what did you kind of fall for while you were in school?
As an undergrad, with a given like biochem major, most of my courses were biology or chemistry driven. And so from the get, I was thrown into labs, you know, introduction labs, which I loved. I think the labs are the most fun part of science. We have to do the lectures, but I think the labs are what really teach you, because it's hands-on and you actually get to do it. And so because I liked the lab so much, I offered to TA certain courses lab-wise. And that gave me the opportunity to kind of teach labs and, you know, really understand what it's like to go through the process of running these experiments, and especially learning how to like analyze the data and what you get out of it. And so in my program, you had to do a research experience to graduate. And I had one class, organic chemistry, which I actually really loved. And so I sought out a research experience with my orgo professor. And so it was a dual mentorship, and they were both great PIs. So I actually worked on synthesizing hydrogels, which was very different from what I do now, but it was fun. I learned a lot, and I because I loved the research so much, they did encourage me to apply for PhD programs. And something I didn't know at the time was honestly even what a PhD was. And like, I knew they had PhDs because they were professors and they were doctors
of their field. Yeah.
Right. So I knew they existed, but I didn't really know what it meant to get one or what it meant to even apply for one or how any of that process worked. And I remember talking to them, telling them that I don't really know that I can afford to do a PhD because we barely made it to pay for my undergrad. And this still, the whole loan process, I was very nervous about. And I was like, if I have to pay for grad school versus going out and getting a job, you know, like, I think it would benefit my family and myself more if I graduate and get a job and not go into all of this debt going for a PhD.
Like a practical choice.
Is right.
Yeah.
But something I didn't know, and I think is not very well advertised, is you get paid to do PhDs, you know, in STEM, at least. You get a pretty decent stipend. And I think it does depend on the university you go to and the area you live in. But for example, in Missouri, it's incredibly cheap. It's an incredibly cheap state. So you can live for, I don't know, not much. Rent averages like $800 to like $1,000 for like a 2-bedroom apartment in St. Louis, where we know back in New Jersey, that is not the case.
You can even get like a basement studio apartment for $100 here.
And in WashU, the Division of Biology and Biomedical Sciences, that branch of PhD programs, the yearly stipend is a little over $32,000. And so you have no tuition, you get health insurance, and you get paid this lump sum of money, which is, you know, $32,000 is not a large amount of money, but it's very livable. And it's the fact that like I'm able to pursue a PhD and get paid to do so. It's really nice. And I don't think it's something that's been advertised well, like to the general public or just things that people know about. Honestly, I didn't.
So what else have you, I mean, obviously you've been able to have people who are knowledgeable of pursuing a PhD, but what else did you have to prepare for in order to get into a program?
Yeah. So the process of getting into a PhD program was a little intense. It was a little I don't know the right word to use, but not very accessible to everybody, I guess, in the sense that they're expensive to apply for. So I did end up having to pay a little over $1,000 in my application process, and as well as like taking the GREs and all that, which are graduate admission. Yeah, I did not take classes, probably should have, because I did quite poorly on my GREs, but I was lucky that I had other things to counteract those grades.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are looking less at the standardized tests of things
they
and
are.
Seeing people's actual work. But yeah, I didn't know. So I've never... First, I knew pretty early on that I didn't want to pursue additional education if it was a master's. So it would be great for myself and our listeners to learn a little bit more about the overall process and, you know, any advice that you could give along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So PhD process or grad school, I guess, in general, things that they look for when applying are strong undergrad research experiences, whether that be research you do at an undergrad or if you had a internship elsewhere, just especially if you're going for a PhD in STEM, they like to see lab experience. You know, you've done research before, you've worked in a lab to some extent. They want to see that you're a critical thinker. So can you come up with your own project and, you know, not right off the bat, because that PhD is still school, like we're still students. And so you're not expected to be perfect from the get, but they want to know that you have the drive and the passion to get there. Strong grades were important, but not completely necessary. You know, I think generally they look for something between a 3 and a 4.0 for admissions, and letters of recommendation, I think, were key. So they really want to know that people support you, which, you know, if you've had this research experience and you've had, you know, shown drive and shown passion in your classes, you can have, you know, teachers or professors to write those for you and really shine through.
Built a relationship in the lab.
Right.
So what is it like? I mean, you're in your fifth year. What was it like the first year?
Yeah. So I think I'll take it back a little bit to high school quickly, in that, you know, and you know, because you've done really well too. Sometimes when you're used to doing, yes, you have. you know, you're used to doing well. You're in the honors classes. And so like mm-hmm. in high school, I was in the top 20 and it's weird because it's like the imposter syndrome exists, but like in the end, I knew it was smart. Like this was my thing. School mm-hmm. was my thing. I liked it. I liked learning. And so I felt smart enough to do something next, you know, whether that be undergrad. And then in undergrad, I did go to a relatively small liberal arts school. So I did really well again. And mm-hmm. again, you know, you have this idea where I'm not good enough, but at the same time, like I made it this far. But then yeah. when you go into like a PhD program, they really pick like, they want really smart people from all over. And so now you're surrounded by people who most likely have done way better than you throughout, or at least it feels that way. And so it's very intimidating, but I will say that I'm incredibly grateful that my cohort, so there were 8 of us when we started mm-hmm. and we all became so close so fast. So it was so nice to have such a strong support system and group of friends where, you know, we all felt like we were too stupid to do it. And so
like out of not a competitive, it's not about being too, I think it's just like everyone feels out of their league. I think because I feel those same exact feelings. Like I recently got asked for like my expert expert opinion on an Allure article for cosmetic science. And I'm just like, I'm so not an expert, but since you say so, like, I'm happy to talk to you and, you know, share as much as I can, but I don't feel like, and that's the imposter syndrome too. It's like, I have done enough work to speak on this very fluently and confidently, but like, also like, are you sure you want to talk to me? Like, are you sure it's me? It's so weird.
When they reached out, I was like, do you want to speak to my PI? Like, he runs the lab. And they're like, no, but you did the work. I'm like, yeah, but he runs the lab. And
also, like, he's got the degree. I'm still working on it.
right. He has the PhD. He has the postdoc. He's the PI. Like, I still just got the bachelor's degree. You know, like, are you sure?
And like, not just, but. Yeah, it's really hard. But one thing that, like, I learned through those experiences that is regardless of how I feel about myself in this space and what I think I've succeeded in this space, other folks find our jobs and our careers so fascinating. And in a space where like there's so few of us as women too, it's like a whole different perspective. And like even running a lab, like that's something that not everyone even is familiar with. So what I've found is like, although I don't think I'm very interesting, like I've realized like, oh, that's kind of like my superpower, like being in STEM and having the experiences that I've had and the understanding that I've had is something that's going to like kind of catapult me into other opportunities. And like, that's something I didn't know until it happened, kind of like you and. Yeah, that's amazing. I'm so glad to be hearing about your story. Like, I obviously know that you've been successful in your own right, but it's great to hear like this response of like, you figured it out and you did it on your own and you found community on your own.
Yeah.
So how do you feel now? Like you're a couple of years into your studies, well, now your research, what's it looking like for you?
Yeah. So, things have been moving forward. I'm grateful. As I mentioned, I'm in my 5th year, which feels horrible because it's like, oh God, 5 years in already, where has the time gone? So I've been working on, like I mentioned, intrinsically disordered proteins, and I was originally working on a splicing factor, but then the pandemic hit. Anyone who was not working on COVID, at least at our university, your lab was shut down because you were not essential. And then like, mm-hmm. you know, the work you did, unfortunately, could be put on hold because there was a public health crisis and mm-hmm. our lives matter more than the science. Our lab quickly realized that one of the structural components of COVID, the nucleocapsid protein, contained a lot of disorder. And so I, a month in, started working on the nucleocapsid protein. And since then, my work has been solely focused on COVID, which has been an experience.
You can say now, like 20 years from now, that you worked on any research related to a global pandemic.
Yes. It's been cool. I got my first author publication out of my COVID research in Nature Communications. So that was a really cool experience.
That was really exciting. I don't know many people that are printed. So congratulations.
Thank you. I think that work did a lot for me. I got interviewed by the New York Times over my work on COVID, which was cool. And then I recently got interviewed by Science Magazine asking for my opinion on a COVID article. And so it feels weird because I feel like I'm not qualified to be having these conversations, but you know, they they sought out. So I am qualified.
Yeah, and- you're more than qualified. So how was it once you've settled in, you've got your group of folks, you are feeling a little bit better about your prospects. How did you, you know, finally settle into what you're doing and feel confident in your research?
Yeah, the fun thing about PhD programs is really, it's only your first year where you take classes. So the first year kind of feels like a glorified undergrad experience in a way where you're taking a little bit more advanced courses to try and get, you know, caught up in the knowledge that you may be needing to move forward. And then you do some rotations. So you spend a few months in a few different labs to kind of get a feel of what you want to do. So you go in with the idea, like, you know, I joined the PhD program in biochem, biophysics, structural biology, but I didn't necessarily know which lab I was going to join or what my thesis research was going to be. And so that was a little bit of testing waters. And I ended up rotating in a lab that worked on heart cells that were derived from stem cells, which was an incredibly cool experience to start from stem cells and then generate beating heart cells in a petri dish. It was so cool.
So nerdy, and I absolutely love it.
Yes, I loved it.
That's so cool.
And then after that run, I was like, yep, that's where I'm joining. And so the next lab I went and I was like, I did a rotation that worked on leukemia and specifically looking at DNA damage that would eventually, you know, lead to that. But that's like, I loved it too. And I'm like, nope, this is where I'm going to join. I'm going to join this lab. But they did a lot of mice work as well. And I'm a little nervous about working with animals. I know that it's part of science and that people do it, but it's not something I could ever. Yeah.
There's a lot of ethical woes to what we
there
do
are.
Sometimes where you're like, is this justified? I don't right. know. But yeah, it's one of those things. So I totally understand.
I don't like it. I get people do it, but I couldn't. And so that, that was a no for me.
And at least you know what, like, even though you don't know what you want, you know what you don't want, which is like really good.
Helps absolutely. And while I was actually still in my second rotation, I attended a talk. So like, there's a lot of talks on campus, with, you know, faculty talking about their research and, you know, just giving the community an idea of what they do. And I attended this one talk of protein biophysics of intrinsically disordered proteins. And I was like, that's cool. I'm going to ask to rotate in his lab. And I rotated, and it was such a welcoming environment from the beginning. And the research was cool. The people cared. He was such an incredibly strong mentor and someone that I knew from the beginning cared not only about me in science, but he cared about me as a person. And I was like, nope, this is it. I want to join this lab. And so that is where I ended up joining for my PhD. And he is, I'm incredibly lucky to be working for a mentor who supports me in, you know, not just my science, but in my life in general, which can be hard to find in academia. And so I guess, is how I describe myself in lots of ways.
No, you are quite lucky and you're blessed. That's amazing. I mean, and to what you said, the thing with STEM and academia and STEM, it's like, there's a lot of people that don't really have like the same social cues.
it's really hard
sure. to like build, like even conversations or relationship or friendship with folks in STEM, because it's like, you'll never really feel like that warmth because they're so either analytical. Like we're very, not like binary, but it's very like X, it's like ones and zeros. Like you either get a one or you get a zero, and that's all you get from people. So finding someone that was able to like, you know, mesh with your personality and also like make you feel like you were welcome in a new space.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm grateful. You mentioned, you know, like being a woman in STEM. I think it's challenging because often when people say, like, think of a scientist, you get your generic white male is what people think of immediately. Like if you ask kids to draw a scientist, they draw an older white man in a lab coat or doing science. And I think women are often sometimes in general, like expected to be small or expected to be quiet, like, you know, respect them. And we sit back and let the men succeed. And so I think it's incredibly important for women to not do that, not follow that standard and like stand out and make your voice heard. And it's hard. I get that. Mm-hmm. And I do find myself sometimes purposely making myself smaller, making myself quiet to let like a man have a voice. And it's like, no, you shouldn't because we are equal and we deserve the respect too. And I mean, look at what we're accomplishing as women on our own. you know, not on our own, but
no, but I completely understand. I mean, I think that maybe it's even like culturally, or even the imposter syndrome, or sure. the fact that like in a STEM space, like honestly, you know, there weren't many women in my STEM program. I was lucky to have some folks, but like they were pursuing something completely different. And like, you know, I always deferred to others because I was like, mm-hmm. well, I'm not smart enough to speak on this, or I'm to myself, I'm only realizing now that I'm like, you know, becoming a young woman and developing into my own personality and like, you know, giving myself fucking credit. But yes. at the beginning of my educational experience, I always deferred to others. I was like, well, they're more knowledgeable. They understand more. I have no place to really like put my 2 cents in. And unfortunately, like lab culture sometimes is that way. Like your superior, whether it's like your PI or whether it's the whoever's conducting the research under their name, tends to, like, not always, you got lucky with yours, but what I realized from my experience is that like they see themselves as the hierarchy, a very clear hierarchy. So if you do have input, it's like, it's encouraged, but not really encouraged. Like, yeah. you know, they make it seem like, oh yeah, I want to hear your feedback. But at the same time, it's like, this is my research. And it's like a very territorial space for educators and people in academia. And that's what I experienced. So like, I kept finding myself, like you said, making myself smaller and smaller and smaller until the point where like, I just didn't have anything to say anymore. And right. I was just a lab rat, and I was just sitting there, you know, batching things for folks with no opinions. And that eventually became really, really tough for me, which is why like now I work for myself, because folks will hear this in another episode with someone we had with Nicole from The Curly Chemist, where we talk about trauma from work experiences and trauma from our superiors, which I didn't realize was a thing until I went into therapy. And I realized like, oh, I don't speak well of myself, and I feel very tiny because I allowed myself to be tiny for so long. And like, you know, be like a lab rat and a little mouse that didn't have an opinion about things, which is unfortunate, but we're learning, we're evolving. What do you think we should be doing as folks in STEM and women in STEM to encourage other women to become part of different spaces in STEM?
Yeah. Well, for one, I think your podcast is incredible for that. You know, hearing all the voices of all these, you're doing great. Hearing voices from, you know, women who pursue different careers in STEM and just like their experiences. And I think it's important for young women, girls, anyone to know that even though we're not expected to succeed, and maybe a lot of times not encouraged as women to succeed in STEM, that who cares, and fuck that, you should do it, and you will do it, and you'll be great, you know, like, and I know you mentioned therapy. I strongly, highly recommend therapy. Mm-hmm. I've been in therapy my whole PhD, a little before that too, but it helps, you know,
yeah,
it's like
it
a safe space. And
so things are going well for you now, that well that you're printed and new opportunities are coming. Yeah. So how do you feel about your research? What do you think you're going to end up doing with your PhD once it's all said and done?
Yeah. So I put a lot of thought into this recently. I still don't know exactly what I want to do. I know I have the passion for research and the passion for the hands-on work. And so being a PI is not something I think I'm very interested in pursuing, especially because when you get to that like stage, it's all about the grants and the writing, and I don't like that. But I'd be happy moving into industry. I do want to do a postdoc, because I think regardless of whether or not I stay in academia or not, I'll gain some experience. And like I said, I like school, and apparently I just want to be in school for the rest of my life.
Okay.
But
I know a lot of people that end up being in school and then they end up teaching and then they never leave.
Yeah. So I don't know yet, but I'd be happy in industry, and I'd also be happy being a staff scientist in an academic lab. I just don't want to be the person who runs the lab, because I feel like at that point, you know, you do get to like focus in on your ideas and it does become yours, but you don't get to do any of it anymore. Mm-mm. You're just kind of leaving others to do it. And some people have that like drive and that passion to want that. I don't.
You want the hands-on.
I do want the hands-on. And I think also being a PI, like, which again, I know I'm lucky, but that's not the case for everyone. There are a lot of PIs who are incredibly smart, and like, they know what they're talking about. They know what they're doing, but they do not know how to mentor, and they don't know how to teach. I think you have to have a strong passion for teaching to pursue a, you know, a PI-ship. And I also don't necessarily know that I want to teach for the rest of my life either. I like it, but I don't know that it's so.
Well,
not sure yet.
Yeah, you've allowed room for like any opportunities. And the other thing like folks in our spaces is that there's so few of us. So if you wanted to, again, start like how you've been able to do everything you have done is you try it and you realize like, this isn't for me. And you give yourself space and room to like figure out what fits right. Perfectly fine. I mean, after that long, I would just say I would like a vacation and a cocktail. And I'd like to like not talk about STEM for 4 days. That would be wonderful. Okay, cool. So I'm going to ask my last two questions. You've been really generous with your time. And I'm so glad we've gotten to catch up. And I can't wait to hear more about what's going on with you. And okay, what's the best piece of advice you wish you could give your undergraduate self?
Don't be tiny. Let your voice be heard and honestly ask questions. I struggle even now asking questions sometimes for the fear of looking stupid or feeling stupid. But you know what? Science is all about asking questions, and someone might be someone is an expert in their field, but that's all they know. Just like I will become an expert in my field, but I will know nothing of marine biology or cosmetic chemistry. And so ask those questions. If you're curious, ask. It's the only way you're going to know. Be open to asking questions.
And then what is the best piece of professional advice that you've received that you still use today?
Yeah, actually. So in my current lab, she's now an instructor in the lab. I think it's also been really nice to have a woman to look up to in my lab space. She's always told me that graduate school is like jumping through hoops, and everything you do is a hoop. So the classes are jumping through a hoop, finding your rotation lab is a hoop. And then the qualifying exam, which can be really daunting, is also a hoop, and you're just jumping through these hoops, but you know your end goal and you want it. And if you have the passion and you have the drive, you'll get there, and that you're not alone, and that you have people who will support you and be there for you along the way, and just jump through the hoops and you will make it.
Because it is hard. The one thing I can tell anyone who's a listener considering pursuing STEM is that it isn't the most easy route in. And, you know, like you said earlier, like you can be the best student in high school and get into your undergraduate experience, and it's a completely different pace, completely different part of your brain that you're now flexing all of these muscles into. But at the same time, it's very rewarding. Like, I'm so thankful it's over, but I'm really glad I did it. Like, I'll probably never do it again, but I'm glad I did it. Yes. And like Jasmine did, if there's something that doesn't fit, there's so many more opportunities. Like, don't stick to something that you're unhappy in. Absolutely. And like, there's always resources for other things. And that's the cool thing about our degrees too, as undergrads, is that I'm a general chemistry major. So like, if tomorrow I decided to do anything else other than cosmetic sciences, like I could, because I have just enough training in all of the other realms of chemistry that I could change my mind tomorrow and find work or find a space to start training or educating myself. Try to have a mild plan. It'll probably not go the way you planned, but have a plan. And then, you know, allow space for what feels like failure, but it's not. I feel like I felt like a lot of things were always like failures, and like, I wasn't the world's best student. And I was like, oh, it's going to reflect in my career. And now I'm like, it hasn't even been on my radar for 5 years. So definitely, you know, it's going to get tough, but pull through with that goal. And once you're out, there's such a wonderful community waiting for you on the other side. Like, I honestly love what I do. I'm so glad I'm here. I get to chat with you. I get to meet new people. Yeah. And now we're building a community and a warm space for folks to kind of relate to us and hear our story and realize that you're not alone in anything you're doing. I just want to thank you. This was so much fun. It's such a great way for me to, you know, start my like new season with folks. Done full introductions of everybody, but I feel like, you know, finishing with an old friend is kind of cool.
It's been really nice.
Yeah. And if you ever have anything else to share with us, or if you want to chat with us about, you know, new ways to encourage folks to get into our community, you're more than welcome to join us. Do you want to let folks know like where you're printed, where to find some of your stuff, and how we can keep tabs on you so that we can all make sure that we're like part of your successes too?
My paper is out in Nature Communications. It's my currently only paper from grad school at the moment. Some of my undergrad research did get published in the Journal of Materials Chemistry recently, so that's been interesting too. But, you know, I have a unique name. I've Googled myself to see it before. So I'm on Google.
Yeah, just we're Google all her on name. Google. Yeah.
Yeah, just thank you guys for listening, and thank you Genesis for having me. It's been really fun chatting.
Yeah, this is great. I can't wait to have you back, and I'm gonna find a way to keep tabs on you getting printed in different magazines and such. So we'll definitely advertise it. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you.